Now, we don't want to try to lead you to believe that you could ever be 100% free of resentment or 100% free of fear. You know, God never gave us, He never gave us anything that was bad. It depends on what you do with things that determine whether they're going to be good or bad. A resentment, for instance, can be used for a worthwhile purpose. If somebody does something to me that threatens my self-esteem, if it causes me to honestly look at myself and see some changes that I need to make, then that kind of resentment can be used for a worthwhile purpose. Let me give you an example. Let's say we're living in the neighborhood. All the old houses are in pretty bad shape. They all need to be painted. Torn window screens, broken window panes. Mine's no worse than anybody else's. So I'm very complacent about that situation. I go home from work in the evening. I sit on the front porch, and I rock, and I rock, and I rock, and I rock, and I'm happy with the situation. Well, one day I look up, and some idiot has moved in across the street. He's out there painting his house. Fixes his window screens and window panes and makes my house look bad. I resent the hell out of him for doing it. I say, who is he moving in the neighborhood? Screwing up the whole neighborhood. You know? If I use that resentment right, it'll cause me to be a little ashamed of my house. And I'll paint my house and fix the window screens and window panes. Next thing you know, my neighbor resents me for doing so, and he fixes his house up. After a while, God's got the whole neighborhood cleaned up like it should have been in the first place. That's the proper use of a resentment. But we alcoholics won't use it that way. We'll sit there on the front porch, and we'll rock, and we'll rock, and we'll resent, and we'll resent. And 30 days later, we'll go over at midnight and burn his damn house down. So we'll never be entirely free of them, but we can get them to the level that God intends. The same way with fear. You can't live without fear. No, fear brings caution. Fear keeps me from getting hurt. If it wasn't for fear, I wouldn't be able to walk across the street. I'd just jump right in front of vehicles and get run over. We probably couldn't have this meeting this morning if it wasn't for fear, because we'd tell each other what we really think of each other, and the whole thing would explode in just a little bit, see? So fear brings caution, and it's not always bad. It depends on what we do with it, which determines whether it's going to be good or bad. Okay, we looked at the first two common manifestations of self. We looked at resentments. We found out how to get them removed. We found that they would be replaced with a positive happening, love, patience, tolerance, compassion, and goodwill. We found out how to keep the resentments from coming back in the future. And we saw what we would have to change in order to have those things occur. We looked at fears. And we can see what fear does to us, how it blocks us off from God. We got them on paper, and just like resentments, most of them look pretty stupid. We found out how to get rid of those fears. We also found out how to keep them from coming back in the future. You know, if I stay selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, frightened, and inconsiderate, I'm going to keep on experiencing the same old kind of fears. But if I could become a little less selfish, a little less dishonest, a little less self-seeking, frightened, and inconsiderate, then chances are in the future I wouldn't have to experience so much fear. At the very least, I'm going to have to make some kind of changes. So the third thing we're going to look at, common manifestation of self, is the guilt and remorse associated with the harms we've done in the past. You know, we talked about the storeroom up here in the back of my head filled with the guilt and remorse associated with the people I've hurt in the past. I'm going to have to do something about that too, if I want to have final peace of mind. Now, it seems as though we human beings hurt each other faster and deeper, probably, in the sexual area than we do in any other way. And I think there's some reasoning behind that. You know, the other animals on Earth have the same sexual urge that we do in order to be able to reproduce themselves. But the difference between our sexual lives and the lives of the other animals on Earth is simply the fact that they don't have self-will, and we do. They can't make decisions about their sex life. You know, when it comes time for them to reproduce themselves, God usually signifies that by some physical change in the female of the species. The male senses that change. The two join together, and it's kind of like bang, bang, thank you, ma'am. And when it's over with, they normally go their separate ways. Not always, but they usually do. You see, they didn't think about having sex before they had it. They didn't think about sex while they were doing it. They couldn't really make any decisions about their sex life. They can't decide whenever they're going to do it. That's all on God's time. Majority of the cases, they can't even decide who they're going to do it with. Usually, they can't even decide whether they're going to do it with one or more partners. They can't even decide what position they're going to do it in. That's all done on God's time and God's direction. They don't have self-will. Therefore, you see very few sexual problems amongst the other animals here on earth. I've never seen a cow on a psychiatrist's couch yet talking about sexual dysfunction. We human beings are a little bit different. Now, God gives us this thing called self-will, and He allows us to make decisions regarding our sex life. You know, we can have sex any day of the week or the year that we wish to. We can determine who we're going to have sex with. We can determine whether we're going to have sex with one or more sexual partners. We can even determine how many times we're going to do it, providing we're physically capable of doing so. We can even decide what position we're going to do it in. They tell me there's something like 64 different positions a human being can have sex in. I have no idea what they are. I only found 3 in my lifetime. And 2 of them damn near killed me. I'm not sure I'm going back to them either. So, what we're going to look at this morning for just a few minutes is not so much as to how we do sex, as to how we think about sex. Because how we think about sex determines what we're going to do with it. And that in turn is going to determine whether it's going to hurt other people or not. And that in turn then determines whether we're going to have to feel the guilt and the remorse associated with it. And also the fear of what they're going to do whenever they find out, and so on and so on and so forth. So Bill gives us a very simple way to look at this. It always amazes me when I look at it. He tells me down at the bottom of page 68, now about sex. Many of us need an overhauling there. Now, you older fellows, don't get your hopes up. We're talking about mental, not physical. Alex, did you hear that? Alex is one of my favorite people. We're always joking back and forth. But above all, we try to be sensible on his question. It's so easy to get way off the track. Here we find human opinions running to extremes, absurd extremes perhaps. One set of voices cry that sex is a lust of our lower nature, a base necessity of procreation. I've heard them all my life. They're the ones that say sex is a dirty thing. You ought to do it at one time in one position with one person only. And the only reason to do it is to reproduce yourself. And if you enjoy it, it's a sinful thing. I've heard them as far back as I can remember. They are to the extremes on one side. Then we have the voices who cry for sex and more sex, who bewail the institution of marriage, who think that most of the troubles of the race are traceable to sex causes. They think we do not have enough of it, or that it isn't the right kind. They see its significance everywhere. And you hear them today. They're the ones that say you ought to be able to have sex anytime you want to, with anybody you want to, with as many people as you want to. You ought to be able to enjoy it every time, and if you don't, there's something wrong with you. Maybe they call that the sexual revolution. I know it happened 25 years too late for me to participate in it. I know that. One school would allow man no flavor for his fare, and the other would have us all on a straight pepper diet. We want to stay out of this controversy.